The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Wednesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, Billy Joel was too short to be a college basketball player, but we're going to talk about how being in a New York state of mind changes the way some teams ratchet up the intensity. When we move to the NBA board, we want to back one team in the nick of time before the market value gets away. And if you're hungry today, Chinese carryout special. We're going to break down the sweet and the sour as we start winding from 16 teams down in the NCAA tournament.
Dave, you every day you amaze me. You make me laugh with those, and they're good stuff. They really are.
They're not really good stuff. But
well, it's a lot better than I was able to come up with. The one day that you weren't on the show and I was trying to do the teases, you're good at that. That's a good, legitimate talent that you have, one of many. But the first talent that I want you to share with our viewing audience today is your first take. What did you see last night that people need to know about?
Can Tyreke Evans really be this bad? I mean, very good, talented player. We never got a chance to see how good he could have been in college because he opted out pretty early. But have you noticed what Sacramento has done without him? First two games he doesn't play, back-to-back blowout home wins where they beat the spread by 47 points. So I'm thinking, wow, there's something really being said here. So he comes back last night, plays off the bench. First thing you take the final score. Okay, they beat Memphis by 9. Maybe it's not all Evans because he's back and they won by 9. Now we take a look inside that box score. When he's on the court for those 23 minutes, they're a minus 6. When he's not on the court, they're a plus 15. The last three games, when he's been off the court, the team is plus 50, 5-0. When he's been on the court, they're minus 6. Could he be a little bit of a cancer in that locker room? Or is he just simply not all that talented? But you know what, right now, if you're coaching that team and you're building to the future, he's not starting again anytime soon. They're playing their best basketball without him. Well, I was watching some NBA. You were watching UMass rally.
Sure was.
College basketball night for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we watched, as I do every night, I got NBA on some of the TVs, college on the rest, or most nights at least, while both leagues are in play, or the college is not a league. You know what I'm talking about. But I got to talk about the Pac-12 today because, you know, here's a conference that was lined at 1.5 wins for the NCAA tournament, and they went under. You know, the only win the Pac-12 got was Colorado's upset over UNLV. Cal bounced out in the first round, and Colorado bounced out in the second. So one win for the Pac-12 in the Big Dance. So, and everyone spent all year talking about how bad this conference is, and this team can't win, and that team stinks, and this one sucks. Well, here we are looking at the minor college basketball tournaments, and all of a sudden, the Pac-12, they're crushing everybody. The Pac-12 in position to have multiple teams in New York for the NIT Finals. We saw a classic last night, a fun game to watch, Washington and Oregon. So one of the Pac-12 teams eliminated, the other one goes on to New York. Stanford has a chance to join Washington in New York City for the NIT Finals next week, if they can beat Nevada at home tonight. We have Oregon State and Washington State facing off against one another in the CBI semifinals this evening. One of those two teams going to move on to the finals. It's, you know, Washington, Oregon, Oregon State, Wazoo, Stanford. So who's crashed and burned out of the Pac-12? Well, Cal didn't get the win. South Florida shut them down. Arizona with a no-show for their NIT opener. But that's it. This is a conference. For all the criticism they've taken, they performed fairly well in these postseason tournaments. We're going to see a handful of Pac-12 teams that you can continue to support over the course of the next couple of, 10 days, as these minor tournaments move on towards their finals. Okay, so today's show is going to be the first of our two Sweet 16 previews. We're going to go through Thursday's games today, and then, of course, Friday's games tomorrow. So we do have a lot of games to get to, but as we saw last night, both in Philadelphia and in Seattle, the Drexel-UMass game, the Washington-Oregon game, teams with a chance to make it to Madison Square Garden for the NIT Finals, well, that lethargic attitude you sometimes see in the first round or the second round of the NIT, nowhere on display at all in last night's contest. Four teams that really wanted to win and played that way.
So now it's a New York state of mind. Let's take a look at these NIT matchups for tonight. Latest numbers before we came on air, Middle Tennessee State, 3.5-point favorite over Minnesota, total 134.5. Stanford, a 6.5-point favorite over Nevada, 138. Now, we've talked about that state of mind a little bit. Everyone wants to go to the Garden. It's one of the keys to the first game, though. Middle Tennessee, if you're given this option, okay, you can get to Madison Square Garden without playing Tennessee, or you can go to Tennessee, win there, and not get to the Garden. What do these kids choose? You know, as we break this one down, we know Minnesota wants to move on. An awfully, awfully strong road showing by them so far. Similar to what UMass did. Because sometimes these things feel dissed a little bit. Oh, you don't want us in New York? You're making us play three straight on the road? Well, we'll show you. But if you're Middle Tennessee, do you come back down off of that Tennessee win? This is one team that might actually have a little bit of a psychological issue in terms of going to New York.
Yeah, Middle Tennessee, a real moneymaker for me all year long. Moneymaker for me so far in this tournament. I'm not on them tonight. I wasn't willing to step in front of the Golden Gophers. I think Minnesota has, certainly from a talent perspective, has as much as MTSU. And that team absolutely on a roll. Give Tubby Smith some credit. The Gophers, with all the injuries, all the attrition that program has suffered, they are playing their best ball of the year right now. A young team that's gotten it together. With Stanford and Nevada, Dave, you and I have a very different read on the Wolfpack from UNR, Nevada Reno. I've liked this team all year. I like their inside-outside play in terms of, they have the strong low-post presence. They have the perimeter shooters. They're getting good point guard play. Not necessarily the best defensive Nevada team that we've seen in recent years, but the pedigree's there for the Wolfpack. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them go to Stanford and hang around for a long time, but that's a Cardinal team as well that's played some good basketball down the stretch. They've taken a lot of money so far this morning. Any opinion on that one at all?
Yeah, actually, Nevada becomes very tempting at 7. The reason I didn't like them, we talked about New Mexico State last week also. Actually, we talked about them before the conference tournament and last week. You got a lot of talent for New Mexico State and Nevada, but it's fingernails on chalkboard basketball. Bad shot selection, just real erratic, sloppy play on the court. But could be very alive tonight. Stanford doesn't bring any overwhelming talent. NBA scouts have no reason to go to a Stanford game, so they're not going to overpower someone. But here's what's interesting about the Nevada game. You know, it's not that far of a drive from Reno to the Bay Area. If you saw Stanford play Illinois State on Monday, you knew that there were a lot of tickets available. It's possible. Now, Stanford will have more fans, but because the fans that are making the trip might be a little bit louder, it's possible when you hear a shot go in the basket, you're not going to know which team made it. It's possible Nevada's fans could be just as loud as the Stanford fans. So here's a game where there's not an overwhelming favorite in terms of athleticism. There's not that much home court advantage. And if you're Nevada, yes, you would like to go to Madison Square Garden. If those sevens show up later in the day, yeah, we're going to probably look to grab one of them.
So, and there's another game worth talking about for tonight. Not in NIT action, this in CBI. But Pitt-Butler, when you talk about a classic from last year's NCAA tournament, people remember Butler making it all the way to the championship game for the second consecutive years. They don't necessarily remember all the incredible wins that they had to get there, including a 71-70 win over the same Pitt team that they're going to face today, a game in which both teams committed egregious errors in the final 2 seconds when it came to fouling. Pitt hitting one free throw on the other end, and then Matt Howard hitting a pair to give Butler the win. Again, all in the last 2 seconds. It might have been maybe the most controversial ending of any tournament game last year, and one that I'm sure Pitt's going to remember this evening. Don't know if it's going to make a difference. Pitt, heading out on the highway to Hinkle Fieldhouse. No easy place to win, but bottom line is, the revenge motif mean anything for this one, Dave, or is it just an interesting thing to talk about, but not something that's going to matter a whole lot on the floor?
It probably does matter now, because if you're Pitt, you know, if you win this, probably going to get to play at home afterwards. So yeah, it gives you a little bit of a spark. There's a little bit of a pride element. But when people say that, gee, look at where Butler is this year, what happened? Keep in mind that this is almost where Butler would have been last year. They did not win the Horizon Conference during the regular season. So what Butler has managed to do by stealing some of those close tournament games may be as good a story as there's going to be in our betting lifetime. You know, we're going to look back at some point 10 years from now and think, wow, look at where they were in back-to-back seasons. An incredible coaching job. Will we see Butler ever in an Elite Eight or Final Four? Probably not. This is Butler. You're just not going to get those caliber of players out of there. Tremendous game tonight. Not enough value to bet, though. We would have liked to have had a little more than a basket with the Pitt side. A 2.5 would have got us in play. We're not going to see that. So Nevada +7. When that shows, we'll play the rest of the board. Good entertainment. Not necessarily good investment value.
I'm a little bit tempted by Oregon State tonight. They're 6.5, 7-point chalk against Washington State. The fourth meeting between these two teams this year, that's a rarity. Of course, the two regular season meetings in the Pac-12, and Wazoo won both those games. Oregon State beat Washington State in the Pac-12 tournament, and now, of course, they're meeting here in the CBI. And Beavers, they've been strong at home. You know, Craig Robinson's team was a team that didn't play a lot of defense during the regular season. They're still not playing a lot of defense right now, but their offensive flow has been tremendous. Four consecutive double-digit victories on their home floor, and I'm not convinced that Wazoo can match up with them, both in terms of their execution and in terms of their talent level. I think Washington State's a little bit outclassed here.
And the one thing we've seen from Oregon State a couple of years in a row, tournaments like this do matter. This is a program that didn't have any expectations last year or this year. So playing on and extending, especially if you're underclassmen and you know that you're actually honestly building something for next year, yeah, their enthusiasm level, let's give Craig Robinson a lot of credit. Enthusiasm level has been very, very high throughout this tourney.
Well, we've gotten some really good emails in over the course of the last 24 hours. Appreciate you guys taking the time to write this stuff out. We're going to do another email, going through and answering a lot of your letters later in the week. But keep them coming in. The address, of course, sportsday@covers.com. We'll do our best to answer as many good emails as we can on air. You can follow us on Twitter, @VegasSportsDay. And, of course, you can get involved in the community. Active threads and discussions going right now. Lots of people like yourselves who are very interested in sports and sports betting. Check it out, covers.com/posting.
Up next, time to shift gears a little bit. We're going to head to the Wednesday NBA board as Money Time begins.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name of my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
All right, guys, let's get right to it. It's money time. This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Philadelphia for the ESPN showdown between the two of the top three teams in the Atlantic Division. We have the Philadelphia 76ers -4.5 against the suddenly resurgent New York Knickerbockers. And here come the Knicks, 4-0 straight up. 4-0 against the spread since Mike Woodson took over for Mike D'Antoni. +75 points against the spread in those four ballgames. Not only are they winning by big margins. Not the toughest of slates just yet. Two games against Indiana. We saw them beat Toronto. This is a step up in class for New York compared to what they have been doing. But anytime a team is covering the spread by 70, a combined total of 75 points over a four-game span following a coaching change, it's telling us maybe the full season poverty numbers, the current poverty numbers on New York, not quite what they should be. And Mike Woodson, here's a guy, a former Atlanta Hawks head coach, and a guy who had a reputation with Atlanta as being a defensive-minded coach. In many ways, you know, I mean, the Hawks, maybe why they ended up getting rid of him, besides the fact he couldn't get him out of the second round of the playoffs, but looking for a change. But he's a guy that brings a defensive mentality. And the Knicks as a team, without Mike D'Antoni, have a legitimate defensive presence right now. Obviously, they signed Tyson Chandler as a low-post behemoth in order to provide that defensive approach. And now, with Chandler and with Woodson, all of a sudden, 88 points per game allowed during this span. And plus 29 on the boards. Both those factors, the Knicks were getting out-rebounded, they weren't playing any defense under D'Antoni. Now, they're doing both. And, you know, one of the final dark moments of the D'Antoni era was a bad blowout loss at the hands of Philly just a couple of weeks ago. A loss that the Knicks certainly remember and are looking to avenge this evening.
So here we go again with the 76ers. And if you've been following the show, there have been ideal play-on and play-against scenarios because there's been a perfect pattern that's developed with them. Is there a better coach team in the NBA? Maybe not. And we could talk about Chicago and a few at the top that play dynamically. But in terms of getting the most out of what you have to work with, Doug Collins wins the chess matches. So when his talent is equal or better than the other side, just play them right off their feet. But when they have to step up, see, you know what? Philadelphia is still a limited team. Now, we talked about the close encounters aspect of Philly. Let's look at it a different way this year. Let's break it down as how have the 76ers done against teams that would be heading to the playoffs if the season ended right now, the Knicks being one of those, and how have they fared against teams who would not be heading to the playoffs? Boy, is there a dramatic difference. You'll see the straight ups are almost the distribution you'd expect. Naturally, 8-15 against playoff teams, 18-5 against non. Sure, you're going to win more games against weaker teams. Look at the point spreads, though. And that's where this is so significant. Only 7-16 against the spread against playoff teams. Against non-playoff teams, 17-5-1. What ends up happening? We tell you so many times, overall power ratings drive the marketplace. These power ratings on Philly balance out to where the oddsmakers don't adjust properly. If you blow out weak teams and get blown out by good teams, they balance in there. So what's supposed to happen here? The line's supposed to be maybe 2.5-3. There's a recognition, wait a minute, you do not step up well here. Remember Monday night when we played Philadelphia against Charlotte, that's a line that should have been 11.5 or 12. Instead of the 9.5s were out there. They're not adjusting properly for that breakdown because the overall power rating keeps balancing itself out.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly, when I look at my hard numbers for the NBA from a power rating perspective, I don't think I've moved Philadelphia in 2 months. You know, they're sitting there right where they've been, you know, as a good team, not a great one, not a bad one, a good team, and it really hasn't changed, not even a point over multiple months. So, well, yeah, they do balance each other out. But in this instance, we have to look at the Knicks as a playoff-caliber team. They would be in the playoffs if the season ended today, and the way they're playing, they could be moving up in the standings as opposed to moving down. Knicks coming in here second night of back-to-backs. That may not be a bad thing this evening because you get the added market value from that situation. And really, you know, they had two full days off before playing Toronto last night. No one on the floor for the Knicks played more than 34 minutes of court time, so they're going to be relatively fresh for a second night of back-to-back situations here, and obviously very minor travel going from New York to Philly. Meanwhile, for the Sixers, this is their ninth court change in their last 10 games. And listen to this little tidbit. Dave gave you one with their records against playoff teams versus non-playoff teams. How about this? Philly as a short favorite of 5 points or less this year, they've been in that role 11 times. They've lost 7 of those 11 games in outright fashion.
Go to the ESPN nightcap tonight. We've got the Lakers heading to Dallas. Dallas right now a 4.5-point favorite. Double revenge for the Mavericks. Got bounced twice by the Lakers so far, including one ugly blowout. But Dallas seemingly at what should have been a low ebb for them. You got to play San Antonio and Denver without Sean Marion, without Brendan Haywood. They reach back. They find a chemistry. They get the win. Now they get a day off. Maybe get Marion back tonight. Haywood's still not playing. Marion is going to try to give it a go. Lakers become the issue here. Only 3-8 against the spread in the second game of back-to-backs on the road this year. Sign of a team with some age issues. But you know who's really looking old right now? Kobe Bryant. On February 1st, Kobe was shooting 45.5% from the field. Since February 1st, down to 40.3 over a month and a half. And look at these last two games. Ugly Laker losses to Utah and to Houston. About 13 out of 47 from the field with 10 turnovers. Kobe looking a little bit old on offense. And maybe could we make the case that even on defense, those legs aren't quite there anymore?
Well, I mean, when we look at the Lakers, how were they winning games through the first couple of months of the season? Defense. Their defense was very good. Mike Brown came in with that defensive approach and a defensive mentality, and the Sixers were buying in. So, coming into the month of March, the Lakers hadn't allowed teams to score more than 100 points against them in back-to-back games all season. Teams scored to reach the century mark one game. The next game, L.A. Brought it on the defensive end and shut them down. Well, that's happened now twice in the last eight games. So two sets of back-to-backs in which of consecutive games in which the Lakers allowed 100-plus. And the teams that they gave up 100-plus to in those contests, we're not talking about the juggernauts. We're not talking about the elite teams of the NBA here. The Rockets, the Jazz, the T-Wolves, and the Wizards. All right. They allowed 34 points in the fourth quarter last night. Game on the line against the Rockets. Houston playing without their entire starting backcourt. Lakers give up 34 points. Can't get a stop when it matters. Here's a quote from Mike Brown. This one speaks volumes. Quote, "Our defense is the worst it's been all year. The last seven or eight games, we just haven't been playing well defensively. We score 104 points in a regulation game. We shoot 51% from the field. And, of course, we lose." Are you kidding me? So, if you're old and struggling and don't have good depth and aren't playing good offense and aren't playing good defense, are you really going to turn this around second night of back-to-backs on the road? I'm not so sure.
But we're not sure Dallas, because of those injuries up front, bring the value that we want to be able to step in. But where we can step in tonight, give us the Knicks plus that 4.5 and maybe even look for a little bit of money line there. Nothing preventing the Knicks from winning this game. Keep in mind that Philadelphia has continually struggled to close out games against good teams. They don't have that go-to guy at the end of a close game. The Knicks do. And now that the Knicks are willing to D up a little bit on the other end in these close games, maybe a better team than Philadelphia. So if we can take 4.5 with the team with the chip on their shoulder, playing better basketball, yeah, we take that one to the window.
Up next, it's time for the Sweet 16 previews to begin. We're going to go to Thursday night in Boston. When we come right back here on Vegas Sports Day.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. It's funny because David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Let's go to the East Regional in Boston. A couple of games on Thursday night to break down. Let's flash those lines for you. Syracuse, a -3.5 over Wisconsin. Total there, 120 and a hook. And Ohio State laying 8 to Cincinnati. Total there, 129.5. Let's start with Syracuse Whiskey. And we talk about Syracuse's 2-3 matchup zone a lot. Jim Boeheim, I don't know, that's all people mention. Oh, Jim Boeheim and his 2-3 matchup zone. Like it's some, you know, unbelievable defense that no one else in the country does. Teams do it, but where does that defense have its biggest edge? It has its biggest edge against teams that do not control the low post, that can't bang on the inside because the orange defense will get out on those perimeter shooters. They don't have to collapse to protect the paint. And Wisconsin, not a team with a dominating low post presence by any stretch of the imagination. But the Badgers do one thing right, and they do it very right. They are a smart basketball team. They take care of the ball. They execute down the stretch of close games. And if you look at Wisconsin, in these tight games, you know, where either team can win in the final 4 minutes, as we saw against Vanderbilt, you just don't see the Badgers shooting themselves in the foot and beating themselves very often.
Yeah, how polished is Wisconsin? Purdue was the only team in Division I that had fewer turnovers. Only four teams committed fewer fouls. They're not going to give the ball away. They're not going to commit silly fouls. They're going to make you earn everything. And Syracuse doesn't earn it very well when they have to. Syracuse runs the floor better than anyone, maybe even better than North Carolina. But when Syracuse has to set up, boy, that half-court offense gets very, very stagnant. They've got guys who shoot well in the open court when they're moving towards the basket. They don't have these spot-up guys that knock down the three-pointers in half-court settings. So Wisconsin's got a chance to turn it into a grinder because it's what they do. They're not going to turn the ball over. No matter how much Jim Boeheim wants to extend his pressure, Wisconsin's not going to give it away. But now the problem, can Wisconsin actually score? And yeah, a lot of people can say, well, they've got great three-point shooters. That's how you attack a zone. As Teddy was saying, that's not necessarily how you attack the Syracuse zone. They're athletic on the perimeter. They will get out on shooters. The Syracuse vulnerability, teams that could play inside out. Whiskey doesn't do that. The other big weakness, though, that Syracuse has, most teams do when you play zone, offensive rebounding, because you're not assigned to box a particular man out. How did Wisconsin scramble in the final 2 minutes to ultimately beat Vanderbilt? A couple of key offensive rebounds off of misses. So there are a lot of different dynamic elements in play here. And when that happens, I tend to not reach into my pocket for a whole lot. You know, there's no surprise here. Syracuse wins by 12, no surprise. Wisconsin wins outright by 8, no surprise. What can happen here, though? This is the type of game where you might see some things in the first half that might lead us to a halftime bet later. I just got nothing for the full game.
Yeah, it's certainly worth noting. Syracuse, a pretty good point spread team this year, not a great one. But when you look at the orange, where do they have their ATS success? When they were blowing teams off the floor. They were great double-digit favorites. They haven't been a dog in any game all year. But you look at them when they were short chalk. How about chalk of 4.5 or less? 0 for the season. They did not cover a point spread as short chalk. You look at them even as single-digit chalk. We can expand it out to being favored 9.5 or less. We're talking about a team that went 5-9 ATS. Not the best role for the Orange.
We move to the nightcap. Oh boy, Cincinnati is a scrappy team that plays hard. And we bet on and against them last week, and we split. Had them against Texas. Tried Florida State into them because the Florida State size would be a big issue. But what they were able to do against Florida State, take the ball away. 21 points off of turnovers for Cincinnati. That's very, very high for an NCAA tournament game. Then here comes the problem. What if the other team doesn't give you the ball? Cincinnati shooting this year, how about number 243 in the nation in field goal percentage? And that's counting all those layups and dunks off of turnovers. When they're forced to run their sets, just not much that they can do offensively. So now here's the first key right off the bat. Aaron Kraft, not likely to give the ball away very often against those Cincinnati presses. So as much as we like the scrappy teams that will compete as underdogs, if Ohio State doesn't give the ball away and Cincinnati has to set up and run something to score, can they find ways to score to stay in the game?
And these are two teams that don't have a lot of quality depth. Both the head coaches, Mick Cronin and Tad Mata, both tend to play their starters, 160-plus minutes per game, sometimes even more than that. So fouls become a real issue here, and particularly we talk about the low post. Can Jared Sullinger force Yancey Gates into foul trouble? Possibly, and that could be a huge impact in this ballgame if we see the Bearcats' front line get into any sort of foul difficulties, no question about it. But Cincy, they've been moneymakers for me. I've liked this team. I backed them repeatedly in the Big East tournament, backed them in the first round of the Big Dance. Not here, not in this matchup. You find teams playing out of their minds, playing over their heads, like the Bearcats perhaps have done on each of the last two weekends. Now they got to step up in class. Now they've had time to go home and kind of cool off a little bit, get all the accolades for their great tournament run. I think it's going to be tough here for Cincinnati against Ohio State. I called for the Buckeyes to reach the national title game prior to the tournament. If you looked at the brackets, and I don't disagree with that assessment, nothing I've seen in the first couple of rounds has changed my opinion about the Buckeyes. And another thing you may want to consider here, we talk about value issues in the Big Dance. I like teams that won but didn't cover in their last game, teams that were able to survive in advance, and yet anyone that put their money on those teams, no rush to do it again. We've got that situation with Ohio State in their last contest. They were tested by the Zags, found a way to win it, didn't find a way to cover, and I think that offers some potential value here with Ohio State as they go into the Sweet 16.
Of course, some people in the right place at the right time last Friday had a winning ticket on Ohio State against Gonzaga. It's one of the things we talked about before the show. Can you believe one of our favorite places had a 6.5 on that game? Well, they did. It didn't last very long. One thing Gonzaga was able to do, they had size around the basket. And the one thing that's been, I think, the most eye-opening of almost anything of the big-time college players this year, Jared Sullinger does not play well against guys bigger than him. He does not have a lot of moves around the basket. Cincinnati doesn't bring that. Yancey Gates, a little bit shorter than Sullinger. If Gates gets in foul trouble, a long night for the Bearcats.
Yeah, let's not forget that the one thing with Ohio State, we look at one stat, Buckeyes, number 6 in the country in rebounding margin, Cincinnati, number 171. When we come back, let's go to the West Regional in Phoenix as Money Time continues.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
All right, let's go to the West Regional in Phoenix, Arizona, and take a look at the lines for Thursday night's two West Region Sweet 16 matchups. I don't know. Michigan State right now, 5-point favorites over Louisville. Total there, $125.5. Marquette, -1.5 against Florida. Total there, that's a high one, 146. And, you know, let's start with the first one. Michigan State versus Louisville. Rick Pitino, he's been a pretty darn good underdog coach over the years, with pretty darn good underdog coach throughout his run in the Big East tournament, and he's a guy who I like to take points with. His teams are tough, his teams rebound, his teams defend, but the one thing this Louisville team has not done well in 2012 is make shots. Ugly, ugly offensive numbers. Number 216 in the country in field goal percentage. Not a good shooting team. Number 252 in three-point shooting percentage, a big part of their offense. They don't have a lot of good shooters from the perimeter. And this is one that's a little bit surprising. Number 243 in turnovers. Peyton Siva has been good, but the bottom line is that Louisville's ball movement has had issues throughout the course of the season, and that has to be an edge for a Michigan State team that takes advantage of opponents when they're not hitting shots and turning the ball over.
Yeah, Siva's been good. The rest of the guys just can't handle the ball. They can't shoot the ball. They scrap and they play defense. So how does Louisville keep advancing with all that bad shooting? How about being number 3 in the nation in field goal percentage defense, number 7 in steals, number 31 in block shots? Tenacious, tenacious defense. But now all of a sudden you get matched up against teams going to play defense as well as you do, maybe perhaps even a little bit better. So look at some of these side matchup elements of this game. Teddy talked about that Louisville field goal percentage, number 216. Michigan State on defense, number 2. Louisville offense, 252nd in three-point shooting. Michigan State defense, number 12. You don't find matchups that one-sided in that element of the game very often. Louisville's got a very difficult time scoring. So what do we have to decide if we're going to take the plunge here? Can Michigan State get the ball to midcourt and get a shot off? If there were punts in basketball, we would tell Tom Izzo, here's what you do. When you get the ball, half the time, just punt. Give it to Louisville. Force them to do something, and you're going to get rebounds and runouts off of their misses to go down and score. Because one thing Michigan State does well, they transition the ball well from defense to offense. But can they keep from turning the ball over? That's a big issue. The backcourt for Michigan State, with the ball, a little bit erratic. How much was Tom Izzo concerned about it down the stretch against pressing teams? Who was the outlet guy? Draymond Green. Close game late against a tough St. Louis defense. Who is he running the offense through? Draymond Green. We may actually see Green handling the ball a lot against those Louisville presses. And the problem is, for a guy of Green's size, if you have to use him against those presses, do you wear him down, which impacts his defense, his rebounding, and his own offensive game in the half court? That's the headache here. If we thought that Michigan State could handle the press well, we would almost be tempted to play the Spartans. Because if Louisville doesn't get points off of turnovers, this is as bad of an offense versus defense matchup as you almost ever see this late in the tournament.
Yeah, I've got the Louisville future ticket in my pocket, and I'm going to hedge off before this game tips off. In large part, you know, Tom Izzo with time to prepare in the month of March, not a coach who I tend to like to bet against. And Pitino, for all the success Louisville has had, there are some legitimate matchup issues here that could give the Cardinals some real problems. If they get past Michigan State, I think they're very, very live moving forward, but this may well be a tough matchup for Rick Pitino and company. And again, if you're looking for profitable coaches to support this tournament, aren't many better than Tom Izzo over the years.
We'll go to one guy, though, who has been around for a long time. He's seen the Final Four a lot. He's cut the nets down a few times, Billy Donovan. So now we have a little bit of a question and maybe a conundrum with the Florida team this year. Florida in the regular season looked like a real underachiever. He had a veteran backcourt, just enough size, good basketball smarts. Expected more out of the Gators. Now here comes tournament time. Two dynamic, easy wins. So was this Donovan saying, you know what, I've got a team that can extend pretty well into March. Let's take the regular season off. And this is unfortunately something that does happen. One of our reasons why we're among the few people who sometimes will oppose like a college football playoff is college basketball, you suffer because you've got 25 teams, let's say, at the start of every season. Who knows, they can lose 7 or 8 games and they're still in the tournament. So you have a difficult time getting a read out of where they are. So was Florida holding back a little bit? Was Donovan one of those coaches in the SEC tournament that says, you know what, we don't want to play 3 games in 3 days. Let's get out of here early. Let's get ready for the big dance. Or was it the luck of the draw last weekend? Ideal timing, you know. You draw Norfolk State in the second round. Almost never gets easier than that. And the Virginia team that they drew in the first round, boy, that was not a very good team down the stretch. So is it Florida playing possum and now kicking their game in, or were they just handed a couple of first-round matchups that were right up their alley?
I mean, I personally, you know, as a handicapper, sometimes you get disgusted with yourself, and I was disgusted with myself for not using the Florida Gators against Norfolk State in the second round, an ideal matchup against a team that just played the best game of their lives to knock off Missouri. And what was it, 28-6, the first 10 minutes of that ballgame. And the rest of the game was garbage time. Much like the game against Virginia, it turned out to be garbage time late. Back-to-back blowout wins for the Gators. So a team with a little bit of confidence now. Dave was talking about the performance in the SEC tournament. Hey, they took Kentucky right to the wire before going down. They were 9-point dogs. They ended up losing the game by 3. Competitive game throughout, and Kentucky's the team we're all talking about as the team to beat in the NCAA tournament. The fact that Florida hung tough with them on a quote-unquote neutral floor with all Kentucky fans there speaks volumes about what this team is capable of doing right about now. But let's not sell Marquette short. You know, Marquette, the Big East has so many good teams. Marquette tends to get overlooked, not a major media market. They're not on TV as often as the Syracuses and the Pitts and the Georgetowns of the world. If you haven't been paying attention, you might have missed how good this team was. Again, their stars have played like stars. There wasn't a player in college basketball that had a better opening weekend of the tournament than Jay Crowder did last week. They're tough. They're smart. They're gritty. Just don't know if they're as talented as Florida necessarily. Yeah, sure, Florida's a 7 seed. That doesn't matter now. See, when we start talking about seeding issues, that's for your talking heads on TV to talk about. We talk about point spreads here, and obviously the point spread is saying Florida not really playing like a 7 seed right about now.
So what we're going to focus on in this one, and I think it will be the telling tale here. First time we see a loose ball, who gets it? Second time we see a loose ball, who gets it? Because if there is a matchup advantage that someone could take advantage of here, Marquette, they're tough. They're tenacious. You talk about that boxing aspect of pound for pound. You know, this guy's the toughest. You know what? Pound for pound, Marquette's probably the toughest team in the NCAA. They win on grit. If you saw them against Murray State Saturday, they outworked Murray. They were just so, so tenacious. But again, because of these various components, like some of the other games here, we've got difficult brackets in this round. We've got some pretty tough lines that have been set. But now, let's get down to business. We're going to be back on Friday, and we're going to talk about finals in Boston and finals in Phoenix. Who are we talking about on Friday?
That's a good question. You know, I mean, obviously, we spent the last few moments.
They'd like a good answer.
Yeah, I know. And if I had a great answer for them, I would certainly give it to them. But the bottom line for Friday, who are we going to be talking about? I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Louisville, Florida. I wouldn't be surprised to see Michigan State. I think Florida is the way I'm going to go there. First game at the current number, I don't expect to get involved. But the bottom line is, we're talking about between the two games, six and a half points worth of point spread. If you're taking dogs here, you may want to be looking at money lines. If you're taking favorites, you may want to be looking at money lines as well. I think we're going to see tight games in both contests, and it's going to come down to late game execution. So slight lean towards Sparty, slight lean towards the Gators.
We'll take a little bit of that plus 125 you can get on Michigan State to win this bracket. And defensively, they can choke Louisville off. If it's Marquette, they're a little too physical. And if it's Florida, they're just too tough. They would out-tough Florida. So we sort of like Michigan State to weave their way through this bracket. Boston, a little different story. Yeah, we're going to be talking about Ohio State Friday. Cincinnati can scrap, can compete, can play hard. That's a tough, tough, tough game for them to win. But who is Ohio State going to be playing? Look, Syracuse, Wisconsin is a wild card. Either team could win this game easily, and it just wouldn't be a surprise. This is one of these, if you had like reverse action points, yeah, we might bet that, yeah, it's going to fall way off the spread, maybe a pleaser opportunity, not a teaser. We're talking about Ohio State Friday. I don't know who the other one's going to be.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% when it comes to the Buckeyes, Dave. But for the other game, lean Syracuse. I don't know if I'm going to get to be able to pull the trigger on that one. That number's going to have to come down before I take money out of my pocket to bet it on the Orange. But I'm also with you 100%. When it comes to Michigan State to win this region, I've got a nice Louisville future ticket. I've got a nice Florida future ticket. And I'm going to hedge off some of that, lock in a profit, expecting the Spartans to win. Or asking the Spartans to win. Or asking them not to win and me to lose those bets so I can cash better bets down the line. But I'm protecting myself in case Michigan State wins against the Sweet 16 matchup. And see if we can have three of the four teams live. And again, in terms of the Ohio State-Cincinnati game, I'm not looking for an upset there. I look for the chalk to come through, at least in straight-up fashion. And that's going to wrap. Oh, you got more?
No.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up then for the Wednesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. From Malinsky, I'm Sobranski. Enjoy the game.
I have-